And welcome to Washington Today on C-SPAN Radio for Friday, September 11th, 2020. Here are some of your headlines. Solemn moments of silence, bells rung as names of victims are read on this 19th anniversary of the September 11th, 2001 terrorist attacks. Many of the ceremonies scaled back due to the coronavirus pandemic. In Washington, D.C., at the Pentagon, in New York City, where Democratic nominee for President Joe Biden and Vice President Mike Pence briefly met, and in Shanksville, Pennsylvania, which saw separate visits from President Donald Trump and Joe Biden. Tributes to the Americans who died that day, and the police, firefighters, and other first responders who jumped into action to respond, many losing their lives, and to the men and women in uniform who have fought the war on terror ever since. Also today, President Trump announces that Israel and Bahrain have agreed to normalize relations, similar to the agreement last month he announced between Israel and the United Arab Emirates. And Dr. Anthony Fauci, the nation's top infectious disease expert, says he disagrees with President Trump's comments that the U.S. was rounding the final turn of the pandemic. Fauci is encouraging caution during this fall season. 19 years ago, nearly 3,000 Americans killed when commercial planes were hijacked and flown into the World Trade Center in New York, the Pentagon, and into a field in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. President Trump and First Lady Melania Trump took part in a moment of silence in front of the White House Friday morning, then traveled to Shanksville and the ceremony for the Flight 93 National Memorial, where the names of the 40 passengers and crew were read aloud.
Christian Adams. Lorraine G. Bay.
President Trump also spoke about the heroism that day.
To every 9/11 member all across this nation, the First Lady and I come to this hallowed ground, deeply aware that we cannot fill the void in your heart or erase the terrible sorrow of this day, the agony renewed, the nightmare relived, the wounds reopened, the last treasured words played over and over again in your minds. But while we cannot erase your pain, we can help to shoulder your burden. We promise that unwavering love that you so want and need, support, devotion, and the very special devotion of all Americans. On that September morning when America was under attack, the battle turned in the skies above this field. Soon after taking off from Newark, New Jersey, radical Islamic terrorists seized control of United 93. Other hijacked planes struck the North Tower of the World Trade Center, and then the South Tower, and then the Pentagon. The terrorists on Flight 93 had a fourth target in mind. It was called our nation's capital. They were just 20 minutes away from reaching their sinister objective. The only thing that stood between the enemy and a deadly strike at the heart of American democracy was the courage and resolve of 40 men and women, the amazing passengers and crew of Flight 93.
President Donald Trump in Shanksville, Pennsylvania, Friday morning, talking about the crew and passengers who fought the hijackers, sending the plane down in the Pennsylvania field. The ceremony was shortened and closed to the public due to the pandemic, but it was live streamed. Friday afternoon, the president's opponent this November, Joe Biden, and wife Jill came to the memorial in Shanksville to lay a wreath. Joe Biden spoke with reporters for a few minutes.
Hard to underestimate the willingness of decent people to literally, you know, literally like the stomp, lay down their lives in the fence. I mean, when you think about what happens, it's one thing to react when you're in a situation where you're confronted with something and you have to act immediately. It's another thing to consciously know that what you're about to do is likely the cost of your life. I mean, that is an incredible thing. You know, there's that, it stunned me. I was here on the 11th, I was here, I'm back on the 11th. I've been here on four occasions, and it just astounds me. It's when you think about it, I mean, that's the, you know, my mom used to have an expression, for real, you probably heard me say it. My mom used to say, Joey, bravery resides in every heart, and someday it'll be someone. It will be someone. The question is, will you respond? People responded. I mean, it is absolutely incredible. But it's, you know, it's sort of a, I know it's not uniquely an American trait, but it's a, this is a country that never, 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 never gives up. Ever. Because we're raising a great kid like this one here. Anyway.
Vice President, can I ask you a question about how young people in this country can commemorate 9/11 if they were born after it?
Oh, you just the same way that guys that I was born after, we were born after D-Day and all those things, commemorate. Those things just mark the character of a country, the character of its people. And that's one of the things you just should always remember. And you should draw strength from it. It's, think of all of the heroes that we have. The idea that, after 9/11, there were literally 6 million of that generation that signed up, knowing they were going to put on desert boots and head either to Iraq or to Afghanistan. My son was one of those guys. He volunteered. He was Attorney General of the State of Delaware after spending 6 months in Kosovo as a U.S. Assistant U.S. Attorney. By the way, I'm going to say something. I'm so proud of him. The only war monument that's been built to any foreigner that I'm aware of was built to him, Bo Biden. And they named the first new highway the Joseph R. Bo Biden Highway. But he then signed up and he had to go to Iraq with his unit. And he came back with the Bronze Star and the Conspicuous Service Medal and things. But all the people he served with, these are people who didn't have to go. They volunteered. They volunteered to go. And they're all heroes. And this idea, don't ever underestimate one of the marks of being an American is understanding there's some things that are bigger and more important than yourself.
Joe Biden at the Flight 93 Memorial in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. His running mate on the Democratic ticket, Vice Presidential nominee Senator Kamala Harris, paid tribute to the victims of the 9/11 attacks at a ceremony in Fairfax, Virginia, saying, "Let us also remember that honoring them is also about reminding us of who we are as Americans, because in times of tragedy, in times of despair, in times of suffering and pain, we, by our very nature, as who we are, stand together. We stand together." In New York City, a ceremony as well, and Joe Biden was there earlier in the day at the National September 11th Memorial and Museum on the site of the former World Trade Center towers hit and destroyed by two of the terrorist hijackers' planes in 2001. And while there, Joe Biden crossed paths with Vice President Mike Pence, the two greeting each other with an elbow bump instead of a handshake to observe the coronavirus prevention protocols. Also, due to the pandemic, the official ceremony at Memorial Plaza did not have live reading of the victims' names. Instead, the list this year was read and recorded in advance, then broadcast online and at the site over a loudspeaker.
William Lawrence Fallon, Jr. Anthony J. Fallone, Jr.
Dolores Bridget Finelli.
Robert John Fangman.
John Joseph Fanning.
Kathleen Ann Farraga.
Thomas James Farina.
Nancy C. Dolosisky Farley. Paige Marie Farley Hackle.
Elizabeth Ann Farmer.
At the ceremony in New York City, you could hear the water in the background. One private group did not want to give up the tradition of reading the names live each year, so the Stephen Siller Tunnel to Towers Foundation held its own ceremony a couple of blocks away in Zuccotti Park. Vice President Pence spoke at that ceremony. The New York Times reports attendees wore masks, and those on stage stayed 6 feet apart. Former President George W. Bush, who was in office on September 11, 2001, tweeted today, "Laura and I honor the thousands of lives stolen by terrorists 19 years ago. We remember the shock and evil and the pain of loss, and we remember the courage of Americans in the moments and days following 9/11. And we honor the fallen. May we also recall the strength of our great nation." A ceremony as well at the Pentagon. This anniversary actually began at the Pentagon at sunrise with the traditional unfurling of the American flag on the side of the building. And then later that ceremony, again without the victims' families in attendance, at the outdoor memorial to the 184 people who died on American Airlines Flight 77 and in the building. Speakers included the Defense Secretary, Mark Esper.
"To the friends and families of those who have perished, no words can ever soothe your grief. No act will ever replace your loss. No remembrance will ever fill that void. But please, please know that the men and women of the Department of Defense will always be with you as we give our sacred pledge that your loved ones will not have died in vain so long as we stand watch over this great nation. It is in that spirit that we commemorate today and every 9/11 that follows, to reflect on the blessings of this great country, to renew our commitment to the principles that have kept our homeland free, and to reaffirm our solemn vow as Americans that we will never forget the lives lost and tremendous sacrifices made on that fateful day and in the years that follow."
Defense Secretary Mark Esper at today's Pentagon ceremony. On Capitol Hill Friday morning, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi led members of Congress to the steps of the Capitol building for a moment of silence.
On September 11, 2001, terrorists hijacked four civilian aircraft and crashed them into the towers of the World Trade Center in New York City, the Pentagon outside Washington, D.C., and in a field in southwestern Pennsylvania. At 8:46 a.m. on September 11, 2020, please join us as we observe the National Day of Service and Remembrance by observing a campus-wide moment of silence.
After that moment of silence in front of the U.S. Capitol, an Army band staff sergeant led the members of Congress in a rendition of God Bless America, recreating what happened spontaneously in front of the Capitol 19 years ago.
God bless America, land that I love. Stand beside her and guide her through the night with light from above. From the mountains, to the prairies, to the oceans, why we foam. God bless America, my home, sweet home.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi putting out a statement that reads in part, "As Americans across the country mark this solemn day, we recommit to our sacred promise to never forget. Never forget what we lost, and never forget the unity and strength that we found." And on this 9/11 anniversary, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is in Qatar ahead of peace talks between the Taliban and a delegation representing the Afghan government. It's the closest the two sides have come to negotiating since the U.S.-led invasion that followed the 9/11 attacks 19 years ago. Secretary Pompeo spoke to reporters on the flight.
"We expect Saturday morning, for the first time in almost two decades, to have the Afghans sitting at the table together, prepared to have what will be contentious discussions about how to move their country forward to reduce violence and deliver what the Afghan people are demanding, a reconciled Afghanistan with a government that reflects the country that isn't at war. There are a series of commitments that the Taliban have made. We have every expectation that they will follow through on them. Our commitment to reduce our forces to zero is conditioned on them executing their obligations under the agreement. So our movement to the appropriate levels will be consistent with the two goals the president laid out when I became Secretary of State. Two goals. One, reduce our forces there. Get as close to zero as quickly as you can get to that number. And we're intent on doing it. We've made real progress. Second, can't sacrifice security for the homeland. And so I believe those objectives are both achievable between what we've done and what the Department of Defense has achieved over these last couple of years. We've made real progress on both objectives.
Secretary of State Mike Pompeo en route to Afghanistan. The United Nations estimates that in the last decade, more than 100,000 civilians have been killed or injured in the fighting in that country. This is Washington Today. And welcome back to Washington Today. A story in the Jerusalem Post reads, Bahrain has joined the United Arab Emirates in striking an agreement to normalize relations with Israel, President Donald Trump said on Friday, dramatic move aimed at erasing tensions in the Middle East. The president made the announcement in the White House Oval Office. He said he just got off the phone with the Israeli Prime Minister and the King of Bahrain.
In the spirit of peace and cooperation, both leaders also agreed that Bahrain will fully normalize its diplomatic relations with Israel. They will exchange embassies and ambassadors, begin direct flights between their countries, and launch cooperation initiatives across a broad range of sectors, including health, business, technology, education, security, and agriculture. This is a truly historic day. There had been two peace agreements with Israel in the last 72 years. This is now the second peace agreement that we've announced in the last month, and I am very hopeful that there will be more to follow. I can tell you there's tremendous enthusiasm on behalf of other countries to also join, and we think ultimately you'll have most countries join, and you're going to have the Palestinians in a very good position. They want to come in. They're going to want to come in because all of their friends are in.
President Donald Trump in the Oval Office, but a senior Palestinian official telling the Associated Press this is another stab in the back of the Palestinian cause, the Palestinian people and their rights. It is a betrayal of Jerusalem and the Palestinians. We see absolutely no justification for this free normalization with Israel. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu gave his support for the agreement in an online video.
We're witnessing a pivot of history. A pivot towards peace. We're about to agree on another historic peace between Israel and an Arab state, the Kingdom of Bahrain. This follows the historic peace between Israel and the United Arab Emirates. We've been working on this for many years, but we wouldn't come to this historic moment without the forceful leadership of President Trump and his able team. And I want to thank them on behalf of the people of Israel, and I believe on behalf of so many people in the Middle East and around the world. It took us a full 26 years from Israel's second peace agreement with an Arab state to the third peace agreement. And now it's taken us only 29 days from the third peace agreement to the fourth. What a change. I want to express my appreciation to His Majesty, the King of Bahrain, for joining the Circle of Peace. And my appreciation for Crown Prince Mohammed bin Zayed from the United Arab Emirates for working with Israel and the United States to expand the Circle of Peace. I'm looking forward with enormous anticipation to meeting all four countries, Israel, the United States, United Arab Emirates, and Bahrain, in this great historic moment of peace next Tuesday in Washington, D.C. Thank you.
The Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu posting a video online. The Bahraini ambassador to the United States tweeted that the agreement sends a positive and encouraging message to the people of Israel that a just and comprehensive peace with the Palestinian people is the best path and the true interest for their future and the future of the peoples of the region. This is Washington Today. The chairman of the U.S. House of Representatives Intelligence Committee, Democrat Adam Schiff, is responding to President Trump's reportedly telling journalist Bob Woodward that he protected the Saudi crown prince Mohammed bin Salman from pressure from Congress following the death of Washington Post columnist Jamal Khashoggi. Congressman Schiff chaired a hearing today on U.S.-Saudi relations.
Saudi actions have left many of us asking a simple question. Does the United States have a reliable partner in Riyadh? This concern has been heightened by the recent detention in Saudi Arabia of former senior Saudi officials with whom the United States had forged a close counterterrorism partnership. Individuals who understood the importance of professionalizing and reforming the Saudi intelligence services. That question came to a horrific head last year with the brutal murder of U.S. resident and Washington Post journalist Jamal Khashoggi at the hands of the Saudi intelligence officers deployed to silence a critic of the kingdom's new crown prince. Acknowledging MBS' apparent responsibility for the murder of Mr. Khashoggi, President Trump reportedly told Washington Post journalist Bob Woodward, quote, "I saved his ass," and quote, "I was able to get Congress to leave him alone." And when asked by Mr. Woodward if he believed the reports that MBS may have ordered the killing of Mr. Khashoggi, President Trump replied, quote, "No, he says that he didn't do it. He says very strongly he didn't." Unlike the president, this committee is not in the practice of taking self-interested and implausible denials at face value. And I'm confident neither Democrats nor Republicans in Congress are going to stop insisting on accounting and accountability for his murder, or stop demanding that the Director of National Intelligence make public its assessment of Saudi officials' culpability for the killing. Justice, as well as the law, require no less. Congress also will not stop scrutinizing whether the U.S.-Saudi relationship continues to be a mutually beneficial partnership. This is especially crucial as the Trump administration has granted Saudi Arabia the equivalent of a blank check, and done so often outside of normal official diplomatic and security channels.
Congressman Adam Schiff, chair of the Intelligence Committee, Democrat from California. You can find today's hearing on U.S.-Saudi relations and all the events you hear on the C-SPAN networks on demand at cspan.org. Army Ranger Sergeant Major Thomas Pat Payne today was awarded the Medal of Honor for his valor in helping to free dozens of captives at an ISIS compound in Iraq in 2015. After the White House East Room ceremony with President Trump, spoke to reporters for a minute outside.
To the President, my chain of command, my fellow Americans, thank you. This is truly an honor. The Huija hostage rescue raid on October 22, 2015, highlights our country's undying commitment to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Members of the United States Special Operations Command risked their lives. Master Sergeant Josh Wheeler gave his life in order to liberate the oppressed. Therefore, the liberated now had the second chance at the pursuit of happiness. The actions by my teammates were truly awe-inspiring. It makes me proud to be an American. Their legacies will live on with this Medal of Honor. And the spirit of the Medal of Honor lives inside every American. Thank you. I look forward to serving as a guardian of this medal. God bless the United States of America. Rangers lead the way.
Thomas Patrick Payne joined the military at age 18 after the 9/11 attacks, made 17 deployments. He is the first recipient of the Medal of Honor in the fight against ISIS. An update on the coronavirus pandemic. Dr. Anthony Fauci, a top White House advisor today, said he disagrees with President Trump that the worst is over. Fauci was interviewed by Andrea Mitchell on MSNBC.
Well, I wanted to ask you about something you said Thursday. You said it was time to hunker down because the fall and the winter is, quote, not going to be easy. The president says we've rounded the final turn. How do you square those two messages?
Well, you know, I'm sorry, but I have to disagree with that, because if you look at the thing that you just mentioned, the statistics, Andrea, they are disturbing. You know, we're plateauing at around 40,000 cases a day, and the deaths are around 1,000. As we enter, and you know, we turn the corner after the Labor Day weekend, I'm hoping that we do not see a surge in cases as we've seen following the 4th of July and Memorial Day. But when you have a baseline of infections that are 40,000 per day, and you have threats of increased test positivity in certain regions of the country, such as Dakotas and Montana and places like that, what we don't want to see is going into the fall season when people will be spending more time indoors, and that's not good for a respiratory-borne virus. You don't want to start off already with a baseline that's so high. So the thing that we've all been talking about, I've been stressing this over the last few weeks to a month or more, to try as best as possible to get that level down so that when you go into a more precarious situation like the fall and the winter, you won't have a situation where you really are at a disadvantage right from the very beginning.
Dr. Anthony Fauci on MSNBC. The latest coronavirus numbers in the U.S. from Johns Hopkins University. Just over 6.4 million cases and over 192 deaths. On Wall Street today, the Dow is up 131, S&P up 1, but NASDAQ was down 66, closing out its worst week since March, down 4%, as major technology stocks dropped. And the chief administrative officer of the House of Representatives announcing today that employees of the House will not have their payroll taxes deferred under President Donald Trump's recent order, that order affecting executive branch employees and the military. They will need to be repaying those taxes next year unless Congress makes a deferral permanent. Thanks for joining us on Washington Today. Get the free C-SPAN radio app to listen to us anywhere and get this program as a podcast at cspan.org/podcast or wherever you get your podcasts. Have a good night and weekend. We'll see you next week.